this hand.
Welcome to After Hours, everybody, with me, Rick Cogan. That is the voice of Kurt Elling, who sings a couple cuts on a fabulous CD by Mike Smith. MikeSmithSaxophone.com is how you can get it. It's called Close Enough for Love. The Mike Royko Fest continues here, ladies and gentlemen. As you know, on Tuesday, it was part of a show at the Hideout featuring Michael Miles and Lloyd Brodnack's King and Jimmy Keane, the world's greatest accordion player, and a pretty packed crowd. Among the people in the crowd were David Royko, Mike's son, and his wife, Karen, Mike's daughter-in-law, and the parents of two fine, fine boys. David and my old friend, Joby Cerny, have collaborated on an audio version of a book that came out some years ago. I think, David, around 2010?
Right, yeah.
It is called Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. Joby, how are you?
Fine.
Good.
Yeah.
How? Remind me, the three of us once did some kind of reading at a restaurant in
yes.
Highland Park. I don't know what it was for, but that's how I realized that you two knew each other. Yeah. How did you two meet? How did you two ever get together?
Basically, what happened was when I was at church one day, a lady approached me and said, we would like to find an actor. And so she said, why don't you do it? And I said, okay. And I said, boy, that's going to be a tall order.
Yeah, I've only been doing it my whole life. Yeah.
Yeah. But, having Royko's voice and everything and,
And she wanted you, what was the event, David? I don't even remember.
It was a fundraiser and we raised $65,000.
Was that for the Highland Park historical site? I'm blaming what the fundraiser was for.
We didn't do it at the historical society.
No, we did it at
a restaurant.
Right, that's what
yes.
I remember.
Yeah, and it was Harris Bank came in with a big check, and
of which we got nothing.
That's why I don't remember what it was for.
Yes, that's why I don't remember because we got nothing.
Yeah.
So that's how you two guys met,
right?
Yeah.
Joby, you read the book and you love the book.
I love the book.
Tell me about this, David. These letters that your father wrote to your mother when they were courting, when he went away to be in the armed services.
Right.
They were very young. This was not the Mike Royko you people out there loved and read every day. This is a young, kind of insecure, but nevertheless very self-assured. And the stunning thing is he writes like Mike.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, that's the revelation to me. Your mom kept those letters.
She did, yeah. And the thing was, for me, it was extraordinary to find out the letters still survived. I didn't actually get these letters. My dad died, and Judy, his widow, sent over some boxes of personal things that were stored in the basement. And all of a sudden, I come across this box inside the box, and I open it, and there's a bunch of letters, and I pull one out. And as I'm reading it, I realize these letters are like the holy grail of my family, because my father pined after my mother from the time he was 8 years old. From the time that she was six, he was eight in the neighborhood, and he fell in love with her, and she was this beautiful, smart, funny, just warm person that he loved all his childhood into his adolescence, but he was terrified. He could never have the confidence to let her know they were best friends, and that was all it was. And then when he went over to tell her, finally spill his guts about how he felt about her when he was about to leave for Korea, and she answers the door and she says, by the way, Mike, Larry just proposed. I'm going to get married. And she was 17, and Dad was 19, and he was crushed. He congratulated her, and then he went off to Korea, basically saying, hoping that he would, get killed because he was just so torn up.
Killed or captured, yeah.
And then when he came back stateside, the war was over, but they shipped him to Blaine, Washington, as far northwest in the U.S. as you could go. And he gets a letter from Carol saying, by the way, Larry and I are breaking up. You know, the marriage lasted a year and it was a mistake. And the next letter was my father spilling his guts and saying, I don't expect you to feel the same way, but I have to tell you. And that was the beginning of him wooing her with these letters. And that is how he, and in the course of these 9 months of the letters, he goes from writing every which way that he could about his love for her to then him going, coming back to Chicago on a leave, proposing, her saying yes, then him going back to Washington, and then her coming out, them getting married in Seattle,
yeah, yeah,
and then her going back, and then Dad getting transferred to the O'Hare base. So these 9 months of these letters go from Dad not thinking he had any chance to going back home married to my mother.
When you open those letters, had you ever read them?
I never read them.
You had heard about them?
My mother told me when I was about 13 years old, she sat me down at the kitchen table with my grandmother, you know, her mom, and said, okay, I've got something to tell you, but you can never mention this to your father. And that was because, Dad, it wasn't like it was some secret, but it was, for even at that point in his life, just the name of Larry Wozni, which was Larry's name, made my father just go into a fit of depression. And so she sat down, she told me the whole story of the letters and all of that. And I didn't know that she had been married before. I mean, that was the thing. All of a sudden, it was this revelation that my mother had been married. And I remember being slack-jawed and hearing about the letters. And then, but I was 13, never ever discussed again. That was the one and only time we talked about it. So when she died, you know, I mean, I, you know,
forgot about them, didn't know where they were.
Well, I never forgot about them, but I assumed they didn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So when Dad died and I got these letters and I opened it up, I swear to God, I almost fell over dead, because here was that story. You know, you find yourself, I was 13, so I found myself as years gone by wondering, did I remember this correctly? I mean, was it really like this?
Yeah,
but my mother had kept the letters in perfect order, and my father, after she died, apparently he never threw them away. He held on to them.
Kept them too. Joby, I'll ask David in a second, but when you first read these letters and agreed to participate in this live reading of some of these letters, what was your reaction?
It was great.
Yeah.
There was a lot of love in the letters going back and forth, and it was very complex. And,
you know, and as someone who had, as an adult, I mean, who your whole life had read Royko.
Yeah.
Were you not, as I was, and I'm sure you were too, David Royko, stunned at the, I don't want to say the quality of the writing, the way of thinking, the observations, because he was wonderful about what it was like to be in the Army, for God, or to be in the Air Force, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and I had that same experience where, you know, I was just whisked away, and I was, my last performance at Second City on stage, they came and got me and took me to my tank unit at
Oh, so you Fort could relate Wood. In a different way than non-serving gentlemen like David Royko and I could.
Like.
I'm with Joby Cerny and David Royko, who have collaborated on. David published these letters in a book in 2010, Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. And Joby has brought them to life in an audio book. How can you get the audio book before? We're going to be here all hours, so we can. But I want to pitch it. How do you get this audio book?
Audible.com is...
You just put Royko in Love.
Royko in Love, and I think through Amazon, too. So either
you can
Audible,
have it on both.
Audible and Amazon.
All right, we got to take a little break, but we'll be back with these two fine gentlemen to figure out... I want to know. I now know when they met, and then I want to know how this project came to be. I'll tell you this. Last time they met, Pittsburgh swept the Cubs at Wrigley. Monday, time for a little payback. Pirates, Monday at 6 on WGN-TV. All the music you're hearing tonight is from Mike Smith's Close Enough for Love, a fantastic CD. You can get it, I suppose, anywhere, but Why don't you go to MikeSmithSaxophone.com to learn more about him. You'll be hearing it all night. I am with, for this entire hour, Joby Cerny and David Royko, whose collaborative effort is an audio book of the 2010 Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. It can be had at Audible.com or Amazon.com. I am not big into the audio book world yet, but it's coming because Joby Cerny started an audio book company a few years ago, right?
Yep.
And is that how, did you go to David? How did this become an audio book? Did you go to David and said, hey, I love that book? And letters just seem so made for that format.
It was great.
And that's exactly what Joby did. He gave me a call.
Yeah. I just called, pick up the phone, and, you know, that's
when
how
you when you do go. These, I know you've heard Mike talk. There's a number of tapes out there of Mike Royko's voice. You, as a longtime Chicago stage actor and a prolific radio and television commercial maker, you are the voice of the Pillsbury Doughboy. You can't do it on air. That was a revelation.
Yeah.
First time I ever heard Joby on the radio many, many years ago, I go, do the Pillsbury Doughboy. He goes, I can't. I'm contractual. I can't just go do it whenever people ask me. I'm contractually obligated to do it when I'm paid to do it for Pillsbury. But with this vast experience, when you approach something like this, Joby, do you say to yourself, well, I'm going to try to find Mike's voice or imitate the way Mike talked? I mean, there must be
as an actor, I'll give you a story.
Sure.
Mel Blanc.
Yes, the famous Mel Blanc.
When he was on the Jack Benny show, he was injured, he had to stay in a hospital bed for 6 months.
Oh, my God.
And every time a nurse would walk in, he'd do Bugs Bunny or Daffy Duck or anything like that. And those records, you know, I collected those records, and I like a challenge. And this, I thought, was an ultimate challenge for me.
Well, so, was it hard?
Was it hard?
I mean, you've done a lot of these things. And,
oh, yeah.
And you're a pro, but was it hard because of the sort of shadow of Mike, and you knew Mike and you know David and you,
yeah,
and you were in the service? There's a lot going on in this.
Yeah.
Thing.
And that was another reason, being separated, that was a difficult time.
How about reading one now? Can you do that?
Okay. How about,
doesn't matter.
Why don't you give me an introduction on this one?
All right. This introducing is Joby
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, a little bit of background, just some references to the letter. Both my father and my mother had brothers named Bob. And so the Bob being referred to in this letter is referring to Bob Duckman, and that was my mother's brother. And the important piece of information here is that Bob was an undertaker, so that's okay. A little bit of...
And here is Mike Royko writing to... Courting his bride-to-be.
Yes.
Postmark, February 1st, 1954. Address to Duckman's. Hi, folks. Another year and another letter from the bad penny.
And not meaning to interrupt, Joby, let me just give a little bit of... This is the very first letter in the book. This was before he knew my mother and Larry were getting a divorce. And he'd been in Blaine, Washington, and he was good friends with the whole family.
Yeah.
So he was writing to the whole family. Ugh. And he really couldn't bring himself to write to my mother because he was still so crushed that she had married somebody else. So this letter is like the introduction to everything that's going to come. So sorry, Joby.
Sorry, Joby.
Hi, folks. Another year and another letter from the bad penny. I'm now stationed in Washington, 7 miles from the Canadian border. It's great up here. They have weekly barn dances, and during our time off, we can chase rabbits or carve our names in redwood trees. Nothing like a social life. The next time I get a leave, I'll probably arrive home wearing buckskins and carrying a flintlock rifle. The Air Force seems determined to keep me separated from civilization. The local farmers are very friendly, though. They probably reckon that I'll give them a mite of help with the spring plowing. I guess I should apologize for not coming over during my leave, but I lost so much weight in Korea that I thought Bob might not recognize me and toss me in a pine box. I had a pleasant leave, but it flew by so quickly that I didn't get around as much as I would have liked to, and I spent a big part of it traveling back and forth from Washington. Needless to say, I left Korea somewhat gaunt, but still intact. The first condition I attribute to the bully beef and the dehydrated potatoes we lived on, and the second to the fact that on guard duty, when sighting a Korean, I yelled, "Help!" instead of "Halt!" All in all, it was a pretty interesting thing, but if they ever want me to go back there again, three of us will arrive at the dock, me and the two cops who will have to escort me. I'll probably take another leave this summer, so you can expect me to pop in then. I've been here 4 days now, and I haven't let the family know where I am. I'll close now and give them a buzz on the phone. Well, you, if you have time, drop me a line. Mountain Man Mick.
That's an astonishing piece of work.
Well, here he's 22 years old.
Yeah, I know. Without any kind of literary training, without a great deal of school.
Without a high school degree that point.
Yeah.
He came back from the service without a high school degree. He ended up finally going, he went to high school with Central Y. He liked it because many of the people who were getting their high school degrees as classmates were returning GIs, and they could smoke in class. So that was his school that he felt good about.
When you think about it, David, I know you never talked to your dad about these letters, but I'm sure you have talked to yourself and to your wife Karen about them. There's something otherworldly about this ability that he had. I mean, it's kind of, to me, who's read everything your father's ever written, including all of these letters, it's kind of almost spooky to me.
Yeah, you know, Dad was, I mean, outside of just the intelligence he was born with, the drive, he was you've never known anybody better read than him. At this point, you know, the amazing thing is, like I said, I mean, he had virtually no real education. Throughout these letters, he quotes Schopenhauer. He doesn't even cite it as Beethoven, but he's incorporating Beethoven's Immortal Beloved letter that he wrote. I mean, he was a guy who had, I mean, he'd been tending bar at his father's tavern when he was 12. He was a streetwise guy. I mean, he's advising my mother how to deal with, you know, taking out a loan, and you know, he's a kid.
See, I have the feeling that I'm not saying that the Blue Sky Lounge was filled with a kind of intellectual crowd like some Paris cafe, but what he absorbed in that place not only was enabled him to be the streetwise, street smart Mike Royko that every reader came to know, but also he would hear, you know, what you hear in a neighborhood bar about heartache, about troubles, about life. Mm-hmm. Don't you think, Joby? I mean, he
was a sponge.
Yeah.
You know, he absorbed it, and you put a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit there, and you got a story.
So in the audio book, is it all the letters?
Yes.
Well, how long did that take?
It took about 3 weeks.
Yeah, Joby works fast because Joby called me.
He's a professional, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in December, and Joby said, you know, I'd like to have this out by Valentine's Day. I'm like, okay, if you say so. And it was. I mean, it was released the week before Valentine's Day.
Well, I'd like to. I'm going to have to download it, but I very much like the way you read it. I mean, you are a talented actor, and it's kind of, it's not,
and I'm
an
good looking too.
That's why we're all on the radio, my friend. That's why we're all on the radio. It doesn't imitate Mike, but it evokes your dad.
Well, that's
you would
a good
be the best
point.
Judge of that.
Yeah, because
you
Joby
too,
doesn't
Karen.
Sound like. Yeah, I mean, Joby doesn't sound like my father. But the thing is, Well, two things. For one thing, Joby sounds like Chicago. So, yeah. I mean, it's... and
you grew
that's,
up in Cicero, right?
Cicero.
So,
yeah.
I mean, Joby has this. But also, hell, I have no idea what my father sounded like when he was 22 before a lifetime of smoking and drinking. And, you know,
sounded like me. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Hearing this voice, getting it to those deep baritone pipes of his. So, you know, when Joby does it, it's, you know, like he said, he's an actor. And he's not Mike Royko, you know, reading these letters, but he's this Chicago guy playing Mike Royko and doing it beautifully.
I cannot even imagine anybody better than you doing this.
Beautifully.
David's going to read something in the next half hour, and Joby, I'll put the arm on him to read something else. Joby Cerny and David Royko are here for another half hour talking about the audio version of Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol, and if ever audiobooks were born for something, I really believe they were born to read, to voice collections of letters. Because they're short, you can listen to them whenever you want, and it's just, you don't have to have that intense concentration. Most people listen to them in cars, they don't have intense concentration anyway. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back with these fellows after the news. All the music you're listening to tonight is from a new CD by Mike Smith called Close Enough for Love. A couple of the tracks feature Kurt Elling singing, but mostly it's Mike doing his thing. You can go to MikeSmithSaxophone.com to buy it and learn more about it. Some years ago, in roughly 2014, Joby Cerny started a spinoff of his production house called Actors Audio and Publishing. They have to date done. Joby is also the voice of the Pillsbury Doughboy and has been in like 30,000 commercials. I can't even count how many. He is one of the most accomplished voiceover actors in the world. And he came to David Royko late last year and saying, hey, you know, your dad's book, your dad's Love, Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol, this series of letters that Mike wrote wooing his bride-to-be, would be perfect for an audiobook. I couldn't agree more. I mean, just hearing Joby do it, you immediately, David, said, wow, Joby, that's a great idea, right?
Oh, yeah. I was, you know, it's not exactly every day at a phone call like that, and Joby was ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah, yeah. How many letters are there? Roughly
111 or 115.
I don't.
And what we are saying is there is the letters can be read as a kind of straightforward chronological narrative, and you see the nuances and love growing, and his wooing becoming more intense and more determined. But they can also be read, as you just heard Joby read the first of these many letters. They can be read individually. Some are hysterically funny, a la Mike Royko.
Absolutely. That's the thing that's beautiful about it. Because, yeah, the story arc will take you from him having no idea that my mother was
single,
was about to become single again, through the wooing, the proposal, the actual marriage, then the heartbreak of how much longer he's going to have to stay in Seattle, but then somehow getting transferred to the O'Hare base and coming back home. But so it's got that. But yeah, I mean, there are so many. I can give one example of the kind of thing. Yeah,
he is not a professional, but he has a good voice and he's a fine human being. Here is David Royko.
Joby does a better job reading this letter.
Reading one of his dad's letters that is included in Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. It's an audio book now. You can get it at audible.com or amazon.com. Just Google it, Royko in Love. Go ahead, David. What's right. this? You want to set this up?
Well, this was around Christmas, and he was just chomping at the bit. He had come to believe, I mean, he'd been told, but he felt like until something actually happened, he couldn't count on anything. But he was waiting to get the word of when he could be transferred back back here. And it was a few weeks away, but it was around Christmas. And he wrote this letter to my mother. We spent the, he was talking about, this is December 15th, 1954. Last night, a bunch of us were sitting in the day room watching TV, shooting pool, etc., when someone came in and said that the officer of the day wanted the day room clean in 10 minutes. It took us 5 minutes to clean it up. We spent the other five preparing a mass. We lined the pool balls up in a cross on the pool table. Everyone stood around the table with their heads bowed. Someone hung two bright curtains over my shoulders. And when Captain Tappan walked in, I was reading a reenlistment pamphlet in the same tone of voice used in Catholic churches. Everyone kept echoing, "Amen," and crossing themselves. I thought he'd blow his stack because he is Catholic. He was so shocked he was speechless. Finally, he said, "Royko, you're damn lucky you're being transferred." Half the guys said, "Amen." So that's the kind of thing that you can just read individual letters, and some of them are poignant.
Of these letters, you think to yourself, some of these letters, maybe he didn't get to see them before he did it, but maybe Larry Gelbart, who created the television show MASH, could have used some of these things for some of the shows, for goodness sake. Joby, can I put the arm on you to read another one?
Sure.
What's this one?
Oh, this one is about an Oldsmobile.
An old rodeo?
No, an Oldsmobile.
Oh, Oldsmobile. Old rodeo, yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any rodeo.
You gotta get these. I don't think there are any rodeo stuff in it.
The 42 Olds I mentioned is the car I recently bought. While I was home, I bought a 50 Ford. But the weather made it impossible for me to drive back in time, so I sold it before I left. The main feature of the Olds is that it continuously provides me with laughs. Last week, the horn decided to blow. I was on a quiet country road when it happened, and it took me 5 minutes for me to find the cause. While I was looking, the farmer, whose sleep I had disturbed, arrived on the scene fully armed. He stood there yelling, "Turn it off!" And his dog sat on the ground and barked. When I fixed the horn, he told me to git. I gitted. It was probably the first time he had talked to anyone in years.
God, that's just a great letter, but it's also Mike Royko's observational skills that are in full flower here.
Yes.
And as a 22-year-old without... And at the time, David, he had no aspirations to... He didn't know what he was going to do, did he?
No, he had no idea. And that comes through in the letters, too. I mean, he's... You know, you get the sense that he knew he was going to be doing something... I mean, you know, he thought about being a lawyer. He thought, you know, there were a whole variety of things. But he had no idea what he was going to do. And at this point, the only thing he cared about doing was marrying my mother.
Yeah,
that was it. And that was full court press. And also, if you have any cynicism toward military service, this is a blast too, because observations of base life and the military hierarchy, you know, from the inside, is just a riot. And you know, you had said when we were talking before about how you know, MASH. If you're a fan of MASH,
this could have been each one. Many of these letters could have had been the foundation of a script.
Yeah.
In the original TV series MASH.
Absolutely.
Larry Gelbart, I don't think, got a hold of these, but you never really know, do you?
No. And we've focused on the funny stuff, but there's so much stuff.
I
mean, so many ways. He's, you know, every letter, even if the letter was just full of funny stuff or observations of base life, there was always a piece of it where he was right back to the purpose
to the point,
of hand.
The purpose of the letters.
That's right.
You know, one of the things about your dad, who I loved, was that he was often seen as this, you know, the embodiment of the hard guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he had that, you know, anybody in Chicago has that element to their personality. But people didn't really get to know Mike, and you could, if you were a careful reader of his columns, and I'm not just talking about the famous November farewell, mm-hmm. you could see his...
Which is in this book.
Yeah, now, you could see his heart and his soul all over the place. I still, we read it Tuesday night, that the piece about Daly when he died is tough tender. I mean, I think that is really emblematic of Mike. We got to take one more break, then I'm going to have these two fine guys read another letter or something each. They are Joby Cerny and David Royko talking about the book, which came out in 2010. It's now available in audio at audible.com or amazon.com. It is called Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. We'll be right back. These cuts are from Mike Smith's Close Enough for Love, MikeSmithSaxophone.com. Kurt Elling is featured on two of the cuts on this lovely, wonderful CD. Mike plays the horns. That's why it's Mike Smith's saxophone. I have a few minutes left with David Royko and Joby Cerny. We've been talking about Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol, a book published in 2010, which is a gathering of letters that the young Mike Royko, way before fame and 16-inch softball, not before 16-inch softball, but before he became famous for 16-inch softball, that he wrote to woo the girl he was in love with since he was 8 years old, Carol Duckman. David Royko's here. Joby Cerny's here. Joby, can I put the arm on you to read? Joby did the recording for this audiobook, audible.com or amazon.com. Can I put the arm on you for another?
Yep.
Let me just give a little bit of setup just so you know the context of this. This was after my father had written the lighthearted letter to the whole family.
Yeah.
And then my mother wrote back to him and said, by the way, the marriage
is over.
Is we're getting a divorce. And so she was 19 years old. My father was 21 years old. And this was the letter that he wrote back to her.
Postmark. March 16th, 1954. Carol, writing this letter is going to be the toughest thing I've ever done. In answer to your note, yes, I did plan on writing once a year, or less. Naturally, a statement like that warrants an explanation. I'm in love with you. Surprised? Well, I am, and the result has been mental hell. For a couple of years, I've been wondering when I'd stop thinking about you every day. I've come to the conclusion that I won't. So as long as I have to keep going this way, you may as well know about it. I've been in love with you for so long, I don't remember when it started, but when I decided to do something about it, it was too late. I was home for 30 days, and at times the urge to go to you was overpowering. I drove by your house time after time, but couldn't stop. I can't write anymore. Anything I say would be a futile attempt to elaborate on a complete statement. I love you. I don't harbor much hope, but please answer, or I'll be forced to call you on the phone. I don't want to do that until I hear from you. Love, Mick.
That is unbelievable. That frankly is like something out of Cyrano, which was also one of your dad's favorite.
Oh, love Cyrano. Yeah, and you see why.
Yes, of course. You do such, Joby, you bring... You know, this is what makes you so successful at what you do. You bring such emotion to that in ways that I couldn't figure out. It's a very emotional letter, but you just make it sound like what it is.
Right, right.
Yeah.
How do you do that? What's your secret? I want to know that.
Well, I don't know either.
When you read something, I mean, you're obviously touched, moved, and entertained by these letters too.
Oh, yes.
And yes. The sense is to bring that to the audio version, yes?
Yep.
You do it so seamlessly. David, when you first heard this, David and Karen, Karen is the one who, David's wife, who transcribed all of these letters after David rediscovered them, I'm going to put it like that.
Right.
In the wake of, but your dad died 20 years ago this coming Saturday, and when did you find the letters? The book was published in 2010.
Yeah, well, I found Judy, my father's widow, sent a few boxes over, and this was just within a matter of weeks after Dad died. And in fact, talk about serendipity. I was going through some mail, and I found a letter with some pictures in it, and I opened the letter, and it was from a guy named Don Carrascos. And Don Carrascos was my father's roommate during this period in Blaine, Washington, in the service. And he sent me some photos, all black and white photos, including one that was taken. It said Mount Baker, and it was a trip like up to a place called Mount Baker. And I saw that, and I thought, I'll have to look that up on a map. And about 10 minutes later is when I started going through the box that had come from Judy, and I found the letters, and the letter I happened to pull out of the well-organized file was, I open it, I read it, and I start reading about a day trip my father had taken to Mount Baker, and he said, I took some pictures, I'm sending some pictures. I had just at these pictures.
Well, there's great, I mean, the serendipity of this whole thing, and you do owe your bride, Karen, a real, boy, transcribing is such an intimate act. Now bookended by Joby's very, very intimate reading. What have you heard from people in the 2 minutes we have? People must love this thing.
Yeah, you know, the nice thing is, people's reactions seem to depend a lot on who they are.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Because some people really enjoy the stuff that sounds like the mic they got to know as a columnist,
right.
Whereas some other people, and I hate to be sexist about this, but it can break down a little bit toward gender lines, because some of the women that I've talked to, they are just so moved by the way my father expresses this love and does it. So you've got both things in here. You've got the funny or the caustic or the sarcastic Royko, but you've got the Royko of the November farewell column that he wrote in tribute to my mother after she died. The most deep, profound love that he could express. So you've got both bookends here, and so people's response depends a lot on who's reading it.
You guys have done a remarkable job, Joby Cerny, who was the total pro. He's done thousands of commercials, right?
9,500.
Oh, it's almost pushing five figures. Yeah,
well, that's like how many columns Dad wrote.
That's right. You're like the Mike Royko of commercials, but you're a great guy and a great producer and a great, great reader. And David,
you know,
I love you and Karen and the boys, and so take care, and maybe I'll see you at the Studs thing at the Hideout. You, I'm going to drive all the way up to the suburbs to have lunch with you, and I don't do that for anybody.
Wow.
I don't like the suburbs.
Thank you, Greg.
I don't like the suburbs. Thanks. Again, the audio is Royko and Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. It can be had at audible.com or amazon.com. It can be listened to in one big stretch, or it can be listened to the way it was written in little snippets. Take care, all of you.
All right. Thank you.
We'll be right back.